Hello and welcome to our conversation about homelessness and poverty. I'm Dana Boyer and I work for Catholic Charities. And today we have Eileen Mahar, the operations manager at Sarah's House. Thanks for joining us today, Eileen.
Well, thank you for having me.
Yeah, could you just give us a brief background on yourself?
All right, so I actually started with Catholic Charities in 2001 at Sarah's House. So I've been here, you know, since 01. I started as a case manager, rolled over to aftercare. And then up until the past 6 months, for the last 3 years or so, I was the manager of the Housing and Employment Services. And now I am operations manager. So I've been with Catholic Charities and at Sarah's House for many years at this point in time. Well, I'm sorry, I started in 04. I graduated college in 01 with my bachelor's degree. And then I started here in 04.
Oh, great. So I just want to let everyone know that I have no expertise in this topic. I just wanted to be a part of the conversation. So thanks for meeting with me today, and I'm excited to learn from you. As of January 2019, there were 6,501 individuals experiencing homelessness in Maryland. Mm-hmm. Homelessness looks like guests at a neighbor's house, shelters, and transitional housing. You could even have a coworker who is experiencing homelessness. So with all the layers of challenges that lead to the experience, what are the keys to finding housing? It's not as simple as you think, and that's what we're talking about today. So, help us put this in context. What is a typical experience for someone you serve at Sarah's House that led to their homelessness?
Unfortunately, there is no typical. You know, everybody's different. Every family's different. The road that got them to homelessness, and the road to get them out of homelessness, it has to be individualized for every family. But we do, you see, they have a lot of some common things you might see a lot is a lot of trauma. When you get to them, there's a lot of trauma. The trauma could have been from a young age. It could have been a recent trauma. And a lot of these times, this trauma our folks have, unfortunately, you know, been exposed to, it's been untreated. You know, they may have not gotten the counseling. There's still stigma out there. You know, for those, you know, to get counseling or to have a mental health diagnosis or to be on medication, the stigma is still real today for a lot of the folks. Sometimes they don't even know. They don't even realize the trauma has been affecting them and the ways it has been affecting them. So you see a lot of that. We'll be seeing a lot more, at least at Sarah's House, more people with behavioral health issues, whether it be a mental health disorder, whether it be some sort of like the trauma or whatever it could be. We've been seeing a lot of that. And, you know, just in Maryland and in Anne Arundel County, like you see everywhere, there's a lot of folks that are still struggling with substance use, you know, whether it resulted from prescription medications, from a injury from work or a car accident, or just triggered from a family history. It's been the norm for the family, you know, so you get those. But I'm telling you, the road to homelessness and the road away from homelessness is individualized for the family and how each thing affected them differently.
Yeah, so one of the barriers you see is a trust barrier. It's hard for people who have had a hard time to trust that you're really going to help. So how much of an impact does that have?
It has a huge impact. I mean, think about it. As you as an individual, trust issues that you might have, if you've gone to a company or bought something and it was really bad and you never went back there again, our folks are going to have the same issues with the different agencies and the different case managers or the different therapists or different doctors they've had previously. Same thing as you and I. We don't go back to the same doctor again if we'd had a bad experience. You know, so these issues that our clients unfortunately come to, maybe even at a higher rate than, say, you or I come through, it has a hard issue with trusting the next case manager or the next therapist or the next person in line, the next agency in line. You know, we have to deal with all that. And that, you know, trust, that's a trauma right there. Those issues they might have had with previous folks, there's more trauma. So we're adding on top of that trauma. And so then we come in and then we're trying to get people to trust us to do the right thing and to help them out.
Yeah. And what are some of the other barriers an individual might carry?
What, to get housing?
Yeah. Or just to make the first step of looking for help.
Accessibility, you might see some of them getting there, and then who to call. You know, every organization does their own thing. So sometimes it can be, who am I supposed to call? How am I going to call them? Can I call them? Do I have a phone? Do I have minutes on my phone? Especially, you know, we've all been there where we waited, 30 minutes on hold? And then let's add COVID on top of that right now. when everything's being done remotely, you know, our folks don't have, a lot of our folks don't have a laptop or computers, you know, so it's trying to get to the to access a lot of those services. You know, not being able to talk to a live person, talking to one person that can do it all.
Yeah, yeah. And what are some of the systemic barriers to finding housing?
I can talk for Anne Arundel County. Yeah. I can't really talk, you know, about the entire state of Maryland and some issues that are running through. What I can tell you in Anne Arundel County, it's extremely expensive to live here. So we're going to tell you, for a two-bedroom apartment in Anne Arundel County, folks graduating with a two-year degree, I mean with a bachelor's degree, and getting that first job out of college and afford Anne Arundel County. They're still living with their parents. And also Anne Arundel County doesn't, you know, when Anne Arundel County talks about low-income housing and what they're building for, you know, low-income housing, what they're talking about is low-income home buying programs. How to get the working middle class to buying a home. So we're not getting, as you see, as I think I see in Baltimore City or Baltimore County gets when they get subsidized housing put in, whether it's through private, you know, contractors and stuff like that. So affordable housing just in general and how it's in Anne Arundel County is a challenge for a lot. There's just not enough, not nearly enough. Our wait lists are 7 to 10 years plus long for housing vouchers, you know, or in public housing. It's just, it's a challenge.
Yeah. So we often hear about how all people need is low income housing in order to be housed. Why is that the whole solution?
Well, because I'm telling you that now. I've worked with, like, say, Rabbit Rate Housing, and we worked with the Project North, and we get folks who get their vouchers, and they're still not making the rental payments. Let's go back to that trauma. Let's go back to that individual needs. Let's go back to what folks, you know, were taught and educated growing up. Again, it's going to be different for everybody else. The folks that, you know, might have that developmental disability that don't understand, you know, as soon as they get money in, they can't foresee that rent's due 2 weeks down the road. You know, they don't understand. And we educate them. We do all the educating that we can, but, you know, you're asking to change someone's behavior in a short period of time. So I'm asking to change 20 years, 30 years, 40 years of behaviors and what is known to them, you know, and now they're in the house for the first time. They've never had to pay rent, you know, that they've never had that responsibility. And yet they have their children, and like any parent, I'm the same way. We want to give the world to our kids. So it's just not as easy as putting people into affordable housing. They still got to maintain that house. They have to understand that lease. They have to understand their rights as a tenant. A lot of folks don't understand their rights as a tenant. And some of these landlords are not our most favorable landlords who target and take advantage of our families. So when they do get into these homes, our tenants don't know what their rights are, how to go to court and file for those arrears, how to get the health department involved. Yeah, your house should not have mold. And that is not your fault. You know, you should go into a mold-free house. You should go into a house with proper electrical and proper plumbing. I'm talking the minimum standards. And I've come across landlords over the years who target, you know, people with a low income, and they're setting them up to fail right from the beginning. And it's just not as easy. Folks don't know their rights. They don't understand. Some don't understand the gas and electric bill because they've never had that in their name. And having, you know, heat at, you know, 88 degrees in the winter causes a very high bill. And now do I pay heat or do I pay my rent? Well, my kids are going to be cold if I don't pay my heat bill. I have to worry about rent 2 weeks from now. So it's a challenge. And not to say our folks don't know. We've had many of folks who, you know, don't need our help anymore. You know, they've gone into the housing. They have learned it is great. I just get phone calls every 6 months a year telling how wonderful everything is. And they've learned through all this. So everybody can learn. Everyone is, and a lot of people don't realize this, everyone can learn. And I believe that everybody that we put in the housing can learn and make it work.
Yeah. Do you find that these individuals can find resources to learn their tenant rights?
Yes. A little different now during COVID. yes, one, we train our case managers on knowing landlord tenant rights. As management, we know on landlord tenant rights. I do refer them. There are some programs out there whether it be the Maryland Volunteer Liquor Service that do landlord-tenant rights. There are some, even our local public defender's office will pick that up. Your Ask a Lawyer programs, you know, and I'm hoping we get more of these landlord-tenant rights. There used to be a nonprofit agency in Baltimore City that used to service Maryland. I hear they were coming back, but then COVID hit, so I haven't heard much, you know, since then. So there are resources out there that, you know, we try to be that resource or make sure our clients know who, our tenants know who those resources are from day one. You know, gotta let them know where to go and then tell them, I don't care if your case has been closed, you may call me back in 3 years, I will let you know where to go. And we have that all the time. They might go 3 years without a problem and then they have a problem. I'd rather them call me or call one of the case managers to get the information instead of repeating the homeless cycle again. Yeah. Because they don't know their rights.
Yeah, so what do you think about when you hear someone say this individual chooses to be homeless?
Let's go back to the trauma. Let's go back to previous experiences. Let's go back to whatever behavioral or physical health issues they might have. Because you can't tell me you ever ran into a 2-year-old, a 5-year-old, a 13-year-old going, I'm going to be homeless when I grow up. I never came across that. I have a hard time understanding or being convinced that someone chooses to be homeless. They just may not choose to trust you in the services that you are offering. Yeah. Or may not believe that that goal of being housed is attainable for them because of their past experience.
Yeah, so what do you think are the most common misconceptions about someone experiencing homelessness?
It's their fault. They deserve it. Or just go get a job. That's usually my favorite. Well, a lot of people do have jobs who are homeless. You know, or they made some choices. Well, we all make choices, and you know, but not everybody has a support system for one reason or another. Or maybe they do have a support system, but their support system is struggling to make the bills just like they are. But a lot of folks have jobs. The housing is extremely high, you know, and then minimum wage is not a livable wage. And, you know, people complain, well, they shouldn't have it, but I mean, they're not even entry-level positions. You know, I've heard people talk about, I'm like, really? You're mad? Because you have these conversations at a restaurant and you're like, you know that waitress is that person you're talking about, right? Or the kid, you're at work right now, but that person, that childcare position, that's who you're talking about. Or, you know, the cook who's cooking our food, that's who you're talking about. You know, when you go to these hotels and these vacations, you know, I don't think people really understand, you know, what jobs pay, you know, and they don't understand that they are working. They're working very hard. They might have 2 jobs. But our boss system is not that great in Anne Arundel County.
Yeah. So do you see that transportation is one of the barriers for people trying to find these resources?
Not even finding resources, it's finding the job. How are they going to get to and from the job if the bus doesn't go there? Or if the bus goes there, it's very limited. So how, you know, I can get you there. It might take you 2.5 hours to get to work by bus. And then 2.5 hours to get to home, which, you know, some people, you know, which is not attainable for a lot of people because childcare closes usually between 6 and 7, or they only open up between 6 and 7 in the morning. So if you're spending 5 hours a day in transportation and then 8 hours a day in an office, that's 13 hours right there. So, my daycare for my children when daycare was only open 12 and a half. So I don't know how that's going to work. So transportation is very limiting for a lot of folks. There has been some strides in this county, a lot of strides in this county to expand transportation. I will give that. I would say our elected officials have made some strides to increase transportation to make it more effective and more wide range. But it's still a barrier for a lot of our folks.
Yeah, so what do you think are the main things that these workers need to have in place in order to find housing?
You need to know your market rent. You need to know how rent's working in your area. You need to know what your rate is for how many units are filled. Because if you're at, you know, 97% occupancy rate in rental units, your landlords now can be more picky on who they're going to take. But if you're dropping at 90, 85, 80% occupancy, you might be able to work with your landlords to maybe be more forgiving on those strict guidelines some of your landlords have. So depending on occupancy rates in your area, that's good for a worker to know. If they also, your worker should have some landlords that they can work with and build those relationships with those landlords. Because I have had in my years, people not want to rent to our folks, even though we're talking folks that have great jobs, you know, who can afford the place, don't have a negative rental history. But as soon as they found out they're from Sarah's house in a homeless shelter, I don't want to rent to the homeless because our landlords don't understand. They watch too much TV, I would say. People in general watch too much TV. And with the TV and movies portray our homeless population to be, it's different than in real life. So, so you need to start building those relationships and with landlords on a worker standpoint.
And once someone is housed, that doesn't mean their challenges are over. So what kind of ongoing support might they need and for how long?
It's individualized for everybody. I have housed folks and within a month or two, they're like, we done. And they were done. They were good. I've had folks, like I said, we might've closed their cases out years ago. I still get phone calls every now and then. It's individualized. There's no like formula. You know, people are individual. So there's no formula to solve, you know, the homelessness. So everyone's different. Some folks, you know, can be budgeting. Some folks just know what their rights are. Other folks are just that moral support, believing that they can do it. They've never had anyone believe they can do anything. You know, so it's that moral support. Folks are, you know, they're smart. They're resourceful. Learn from, we can learn more from our own people than they're going to learn from us. So, and that's what I've been even telling, you know, some of the staff here, you know, go find out how they did it. Just so we can help the next person, you know, how do they do it? So it's individualized based. I know here at Sarah's House, we'll offer support services just in up to 2 years after someone exits. It's, you know, they have to want to do it. We have workers that work with them for up to 2 years out in the community. And the goal is, you know, in the beginning, they might be more top heavy, but we should let them know where the resources are out in the community, where they live, you know, because what's good at giving someone a resource where they can't attain because it's, you know, 20 miles away, let's give it in their neighborhoods. So everyone's different. So we work with that person. What is it? You know, what got you home? What do you need, you know, in order to make this work? They'll tell you. Most people know. They know what they need. So we just try to make sure we help with those resources.
Yeah. So when do you consider someone permanently rehoused, and like how long do they have to be in housing for you to feel like they found their real home and are no longer at risk for homelessness?
So the first one, as soon as you get in the house, they're permanently housed, and we start even before we get them in there. You know, while we're waiting for, to get the move-in date, you know, and to schedule everything and sign the lease, we're working on that ahead of time. You got to work on it from ahead of time, what's going to take. But once they're housed. But that's when, you know, sometimes the real work begins. You know, think about it. I'll talk about myself. You know, you lose that weight. It's easier to lose the weight than it is to keep that weight off. And we've all been there. So sometimes it's easier to obtain things than it is easier to maintain things, you know. So once we get them in, they're your housed. When I see them, they're permanently housed. When do I see them good? When they tell me they're good. They know. And then some people, you know, they're like, I got it from here. They don't want any services. And that's fine. People have a right to say, I don't want your services anymore. That's fine. You have to allow people to make their own decisions, especially in their own home. But we always tell them we're still there to call us anytime if you ever change your mind. But it's usually they'll let you know when they're good. If you have that relationship with them, they'll let you know. For some, it could be 2 months. Others, it's 6 months. Other, it's a year. But it's when they feel comfortable that, you know, they have it. But the entire time, we're encouraging and supporting them to get there. You know, what is it going to take? What was that trauma in the past? Were they always evicted at month 8? You know, you know, did they only make it the first 3 or 4 months? And because they never held a job longer than 3 or 4 months. So what is that? You know, everyone's different. It's on that individual person, not on us.
So are there any success stories that you'd like to share?
Well, we've had plenty of successes over here, which is great. So we've worked with folks that after leaving here, they started their education while they were here. We're in what was then called our transitional housing program. They became homeowners. They went back to school. Now they have their master's degree. They have really good jobs. You know, so we're talking have really grown. We've had plenty of, we've had a couple more folks here over the years that have actually left here into home ownership, you know, gotten into programs and bought homes. Some saved up and bought trailers of their own, you know, so even without the program, just went ahead and, you know, got that little couple thousand dollars for the down payment. But because they were able to clear up their credit issues while they were in transitional, you know, and work on those and got their education or got a job skill, maybe not necessarily a full-year degree, but some sort of job skill, they were able to own homes. We've had plenty of folks over the years who have done beautifully, you know, have maintained housing. I get phone calls from people all the time, just checking in. It's been 5 years, telling how wonderful life is. You know, they got the bills paid. They've been able to maintain the house. They've got this job. Their kids are doing great here. So success is very individualized. You know, for some successes, they'll come up and go, I finally got my bachelor's degree. I told you I was going to do it. Never doubted you. You know, or I finally got to move to this neighborhood because that was always like their success to move to that neighborhood or just to be housed, you know, and stay housed. That was their big success. 5 years, still in the same place, Miss Eileen, still in the same place. Kids are doing great. They're getting straight A's in school. You know, they got a great group of friends. You know, nobody's been getting in any trouble. All the old behaviors are gone. These are a success. These are huge successes. So it's all individualized. We have people calling us up all the time. They'll come back and talk on our behalf. You know, they'll come to talk to donors, talk to companies that we're trying to form relationships with to talk about success stories. They want to come back. They want to share the story. I have folks that'll come back and talk to their own clients about their journey, you know, see if they can get anything out of their journey being from Sarah's house going on forward. A lot of people getting additional job skills, education skills, whether they're working up for their own job. We have folks making more money than I'm making. You know, they come out because they've had great resumes and great job skills. They just had to get with the right people or to get with the right organization that we were able to lead them to, you know, so they can correlate job skills from one job to another. That's transferable skills. They didn't even know what transferable skills was. You know, so it is wonderful. I mean, we have lots of success all the time. It is great seeing, you know, our families grow, our families achieve the goals they set forth and want to achieve. And every family, that's different. So we love it. You know, we cheer with them. You know, we congratulate with them. You know, it's always great when you see the first kid in the family and generations that graduate high school, and then that kid goes on to college. You know, not even like graduating, the first one to graduate high school, but they even went to college at that point in time. We've got children get scholarships, you know, to colleges. It's parents get scholarships to go to colleges, you know, or scholarships or free money to go get certificate programs. And I don't know if you know, but these certificate programs might be better, you know, might be better off than the colleges. You come out, you know, with a certificate program, you have no, you're filling a need because, you know, we have a big need for a lot of these jobs that are coming up, a lot of these trades jobs coming up. So they're coming out of these trades not owing any money, and they have a potential making a lot more money than a college education. And it's a good job. And people like those jobs. You know, they may not be meant for college. And that's okay. They want to work with their hands. They want to be outside. They want to do this. And we listen. And we make those connections. And when you listen and you make those connections and people, you know, feel like they have a choice in their future and they're safe, they go far. And they make it happen. And they'll call back. And we love to hear from them. You know, we love to hear it from it all the time.
Yeah.
So it's great. I mean, to watch people grow, whatever that success is for them, it's lovely. I mean, there's nothing better than that.
Thanks for sharing that.
Oh, thanks. Thank you for asking.
Well, great. Thank you, Eileen, for meeting with me today and sharing your expertise.
Oh, well, thank you for having me.
Again, this was Eileen Mahar, the operations manager at Sarah's House. We have more topics on homelessness and poverty this week. Be sure to check them out, and thanks for listening.
Thank you for having us.